Sassy Jack Stitchery is sponsoring this week's show with Christine Miller. The new shop is on track to open in a couple of weeks, so start making your travel plans. On the Sassy Jack's Facebook page, Kim recently showed a band sampler that's going to be the focus of a March workshop. It's stunning, and you're going to want to be part of it. Sassy Jack's also has the popular Needlework Press 2024 Book of Days available for pre-order. Those books sell out quickly, so act now to secure your copy. Also note that while we wait for the shop to open, Sassy Jack's continues to be your complete online source for all needlework things, including the terrific line of Sassafras samplers. Kim will be more than happy to kit up your next project or help you add to your stash. There's more going on at Sassy Jack's, and you can keep up with all of it through the Sassy Jack's website, sassyjackstitchery.com, the Jack's Journal newsletter, or the Sassy Jack's Facebook page. Get your name on the list so you don't miss out. Thanks to Sassy Jack Stitchery for sponsoring this show, and now our conversation with Christine Miller. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists, and returning Christine Miller. Christine, welcome.
Oh gosh, thank you, Beth and Gary, for having me back again. I really appreciate it.
Well, we promised, because it was February 19, 2022 that we first talked to you about weaving with wire, and you were working on a book. And so we said when you got the book done, we needed to talk to you again. And the book is done and available, and really glad we're talking with you, because what a fantastic book. You nailed it, stem to stern.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous book. When I got it in the mail, I was immediately touching it. It was like, oh, this is, it feels nice. You know, I'm a tactile, you know, we're needle workers. And it's like the pictures, everything. It's a beautiful book. Beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, it's, you know, it was my goal to have it be visually compelling. I, you know, over the years, I've done a lot of my own photography, but the book has a lot of professional photography of my artwork, but all the process shots I did myself. And I think it's really helpful when, you know, artists kind of learn how to take pictures of their work, so maybe not to send in for exhibition entries, but it just really helps you compose in the lens, right? So so all those process shots are mine.
Well done. Well done.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
And it made me want to, again, when I took it to an art quilt group, and I said, okay, this really makes me want to take up weaving and learn how to do this. And my friend said, she showed me one of the looms in the book. She goes, I have this loom. We could set it up for you, Beth. And it's like, time. I need time.
Awesome. Well, join the fray is what I say, you know.
Oh, yes. I need to. Because this book, I think it almost can take you. Well, it does. It takes you step by step. That's what I found so enjoyable. It got me sucked into, like, okay, so you set up this way. And I was like, I need a loom to start. So.
Yeah, I got to admit, I actually stopped partway through the book and started looking up looms to see how much it was going to cost me.
Oh, my gosh. You guys are so cute. You know, I just have a question for you. I mean, so you're being very complimentary of the book, and we can talk about maybe what some of your observations were, but neither of you are weavers. And I did have goals to stretch across, you know, out of weaving into art education and a foundation of art principles, because I realized I don't know who my reader is going to be. Right. And so I wanted to really include that as sort of a backbone of the book, and also model questioning. As you may remember, I'm a retired visual art educator and taught high school and taught, you know, ninth and 10th graders the last 9 years of my teaching. And, you know, I really wanted to teach them how to ask questions and how to think. So that was very much embedded in the book, I hope.
Yes. And that was one thing I noted, was that I loved those questions, because that's what I started reading those. And then I started questioning the projects I was currently working on. Okay. Mm-hmm. Why are you working on this? Why are you using this color? What if you tried a different stitch? How would that change the composition of the piece? You know, what if I did something else here instead of there? You know, it did get me. And then asking about my creative process, why am I working on mainly cross stitch right now? Why, you know, what is drawing me? What, or why am I working on white work? Why is drawing me to this type of needlework? It started making me ask those questions about myself and the art I was currently doing.
So yay.
I loved it.
Yay.
Yeah, no, and that was for me too. Same thing, because I enjoy the art, obviously, or we wouldn't be talking to you a second time. But the putting together of these projects and all that goes into weaving, and you even say up front, this is intermediate to advanced weaving, because your wire, you know, this is not something that a beginner is not necessarily going to pick up. But it's section five that is so powerful, and it to me is worth owning the whole book, just because just the discussion you have about what goes through an artist's mind, how to approach art, how to approach your projects is just, it's just superb. And I read every word of it. It was, cause yeah, I'll admit some of the weaving stuff I had to skim over, cause it wasn't making sense to me, but that section right there is worth everything to anyone who does needle art. It's really well done. Yeah.
Well, and you know, my editor, at one point she kind of said, I don't think there's going to be room for this. And I was like, oh, hell no. that you're not leaving this part out. And you know, my artistic life is a very windy road. I've reinvented myself many times, and part of that reinvention was becoming an art educator. And I didn't start teaching till I was 50. So I entered the classroom and I thought, oh, I've had so many jobs and done so many things, this is going to be a cakewalk. And it's like, wrong. But, you know, I had my bachelor's, and then my school district paid for me to get my master's. And that master's study was really so juicy, because it really took me into this world of thinking and questioning. And I knew that that was the core of creation. And yet we don't always start there, you know. Sometimes it's just eye candy. You just see something and you're like, oh, I have to make that, you know, but maybe you haven't really thought about a big idea about how that's meaningful in your life, or how you can take that idea and make it more meaningful about your own experiences. So, I definitely wanted whoever my reader was to have a little bit of artistic foundation. And if I can just say one more thing, and it says it in the book, you know, you're creating your own unique art material. And you have to really develop some divergent thinking skills. When that material comes off the loom, you're like, well, now what am I going to do with it? You know? And it's, that's what I find to be so exciting. And in the art education world, and that's why this book is not really a project book. I do have a handful of little jewelry designs that people, if they don't have an idea, they could start there, right? Here's a few ways you could manipulate the fabric, but, you know, it is really very open-ended, and we call that student-driven inquiry in art education, where they start asking questions and thinking about ideas and take it in to their life, and that makes it more meaningful and relevant to them.
Yeah. No, and yeah, I appreciate when you walked into the classroom. Yeah, it doesn't matter what your life experiences are. There's nothing quite like 25 kids sitting there looking at you, and you gotta perform.
Oh, for sure, yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Nothing quite like that. Yeah. Well, see, and that was the thing, you know, that the book at the 30,000 foot level is you're operating effectively on the cutting edge of your art. I'm sure very few people doing this at your level. And then, okay, that's great, and it's beautiful art. But then when you explain the mental process behind it, and then, yeah, I'm like Beth, now I start applying that to what I'm doing. And, yeah, boy, the wheels just start spinning at 100 miles an hour because it's you really open the mind with that section.
Oh, good. That was my intent, yep, for sure.
No, well done. And the book is just beautifully, beautifully built, right, from stem to stern. Wow.
Right.
Yeah. Thank who was it? I didn't even look who the publishing company was. What is it?
It's Schiffer. Yeah. And, you know, I chose them to send my first, you know, proposal out to. They have an amazing catalog of fiber books, and so I really thought it would be a great place for my book to be. And you know, there's a book that Arlene Fish wrote years ago, Working with Metal Using Fiber Techniques. That's not the exact title, but you know, her book too is about process and technique and not so much a project. And so I wanted this book to be a process and technique book. I really hope that it's going to stand the test of time. You know, a lot of project books, they become dated fairly quickly.
Right.
Because, you know, tastes and trends change. But, you know, this book was intended to be out there for a long time to teach people how to do this. And, oh my gosh, there's not really anybody teaching it. And there are people weaving with wire. And I've started a whole wire is fiber community through my online classes and through my students. But my real impetus for this project, Gary and Beth, was I just want this information to be out there so that other people can begin pushing the boundaries, because, you know, I've said in the book and in my classes, I've been weaving with wire for 30 years, and I truly feel I haven't even scratched the surface of possibilities. So that's what keeps me coming back to the loom every time. It's like, well, now what? And what else can I do? You know,
yeah. I was reading about how you work with the wire and how you explain how to keep tension on the wire. And that part was so good that me, a non-weaver, I was like, okay, then this is what she's doing. It was just interesting. Your book is really well written so that you can learn the technique if you want to. And I for a non-weaver to understand what you were doing just at that beginning point. Now, after that, it was a little more technical than I could follow because I don't weave. But that part made sense to me, and I loved that about it, because I realized a little while ago that I'm much more of a visual learner. I like to watch a video. I like to look at the pictures. But reading the words and looking at your images, I was like, oh, it's like the light bulb went on. Does that make sense? And I just love that about it, your book. And it was,
well,
yeah.
I appreciate that. And honestly, you know, I was talking about my crooked road. I never set out to be a teacher in this lifetime. And there I found myself in education. And, you know, I think all three of us are at a stage of life where we can look back and go, oh, that's why I had to do that. And that's why I had to do that, you know, to sort of enable me to do this next thing. And I'm so grateful for my teaching experience, because I don't, you know, that experience helped me write this book, because I had to be, you know, go into the classroom every day and explain to the 14 to 16 year olds exactly what to do, you know, to make their art. So that is a high compliment, Beth.
No, that's what, you know, that my job, my day job is publishing magazines, and that's the way I have always viewed them. And I've done what, half dozen different magazines in completely different subjects, and people have asked, you know, how do you do that? Well, it's not the subject, it's teaching. You're just teaching through a different medium to a different audience, but it's the teaching principles that are still there. And that's what you have to deliver. And yeah, I appreciate that your teaching experience helps you put the book together, because that's exactly what happens. Yeah. Yeah. The, okay. So I got to know when, and the epigraph, you know, that's the other thing. The Scott Adams quote, creativity is allowing yourself to make mistakes and art is knowing which ones to keep. I thought that perfectly set the tone for the whole book. Well chosen there. So what did it feel like when that first one showed up at your doorstep?
Oh my gosh. Well, they didn't tell me ahead of time that it was on its way. And so I just came home one day and there was a box on my porch with the book and a lovely bottle of wine inside. And
nice.
And there was the book. And I think my editor, Carla, she was so dear. We bonded very strongly over the production of this, because I just, you know, it's like, I need to look at it one more time. I need to read through it one more time. I just wanted to be sure that there weren't any mistakes, because, you know, once it goes to print, it's there it is. That's it. And, I can't even... This, I'm still kind of walking on a cloud about it. I think the thing that has been the most interesting to me is looking back to see over these 30 years how I just naturally went down these different pathways. Okay, let's make jewelry with this material. Now, oh, and then one day I had the light bulb, Beth. It's like, oh, I could make a basket using the woven metal fabric. And then I went down that pathway. And then I taught sculpture in high school. So, you know, I love 3D and I love making sculptural forms. So then there's that and the wall art and then the small metals work. And then the little experience I got in casting the bronzes. And so I think to have that journey documented in this book, personally, my own artistic journey is amazing. And, you know, I may never have a retrospective exhibit anywhere in the world, but you know what? I've got a little retrospective exhibit right here in this book. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that was the other part up front. You know, when people say, I wrote a book. Well, you and a whole lot of other people wrote a book. You know, the teachers that you've had, the people, the other artists, and, you know, and then it pops up a couple of times, Keith Miller, you know. so many people into it. You know, your name's on the cover, but so many people that make a difference and make it possible.
Oh, absolutely. My current photographer, Gabby Pruitt, she has photographed all of my work, like from the coral reef to now, and in her photography. And she's her studio is just a couple of blocks from mine. And, you know, when it came out, I said, Gabby, this book is as much your book as it is mine, because her photography is on the front cover and just all the way through. And I couldn't have done it without her. And then, of course, Mr. Miller is just the backbone of my life and has let me fly, which does not always happen in marital relationships, you know, that you get to fly as high as you want to go. And, you know, all these different years and with all these different projects and ideas, you know, sometimes I'll get a little bit of a side eye, but, you know, he's like, okay, well, let's see what happens. And off I go. And so I'm very lucky girl, to have the community and the people in my life that I do right now, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's the only way it happens. The only way it happens. And I appreciate that you developed a relationship with your editor, because people don't realize that any writer is the role that the editor plays in the process is so significant. And, mm-hmm. And they're very different functions. I once worked for a person who, write stuff. I finally told him, I am not a writer. I can get by, but I'm not a writer. I'm an editor. And he looked at me like I was nuts. And no, it's very different functions. And and they both come together to create the proper product. But yeah, a good editor is really. It's what I do, but it's really valuable, and sounds like you had a good one.
Yes, we did. She was so cute. She would always say, "You're my favorite," and I said, "Oh, you just say that to all the people."
That's funny.
So when you started to put this book together, did you have an outline and a clear concept? Or did you start and then find it evolving on you?
Well, you know, what was interesting is before I really thought to write the book, I shifted to teaching online, you know, during the pandemic. More and more artists were teaching online, and I think just because of my teaching experience, and I took a 3-day Zoom workshop with another fiber artist, and that kind of gave me the courage. I thought, well, I think I can do this. And so 2 years ago, I mean, the book and the online course kind of happened side by side, but I went ahead and set up my online school at ChristineKMillerCourses.com and teach weaving with wire as a self-paced course and also as a 3-day Zoom workshop. And so all of that curriculum is a video instruction that Mr. Miller helped me video just in my studio. And I edited all the videos. And, you know, I think because I've been doing this for 30 years, I knew exactly what to teach. And I've taught, you know, workshops to groups of people face to face. So, really it was kind of like this, everything went up online. And then I just took what I had made in my videos and started writing from it. So that gave the structure of how to put the book together. And, you know, so they were very synergistic, the two mm-hmm. parts, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The project, the foundation project, and mm-hmm. I loved that you said, basically, don't get creative with this thing. Do it.
Yeah.
Do it the way I tell you. Build the foundation for your skills. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I think what was a real pivotal part of this book, and I'm trying to find what page it's where I have the little map, right? Of yeah. Okay, now you've done the foundation project, and now you're going, now what can, what direction can I go in? But I, you know, I think just because I'd been a classroom teacher and I've been in a lot of professional development courses, you know, with other art teachers, and I know how they roll. You know, some people just want to dive into the deep into the pool and they don't really want to go step by step. And then it, and Beth, it's really about people's learning preferences, right?
Right.
That's what sort of drives them. But, you know, because of the material, it's like you really need to understand what the process of this is to work with this material. And if you do it exactly like you tell, like I tell you to, then I can guarantee a high percentage of success. And if you want to deviate, well, you're going to be on your own. So, you know, on page 18 of the book, the artistic journey, it's like you start with that foundation project, and then, and after you do that a time or two, well, then you can decide what do you want to do with it. You know, do you want to make jewelry, or do you want to make baskets, or you know, whatever.
Right. Right. And I think sometimes, you know, I tend to get very impatient and I want to skip that learning the basics, you know, learning how, and it's like, but I think by learning those basics, learning how your materials react, then you're going to have more success for whatever vision you have, like you've got going on in your head that you want to move forward to. And I, that's the one thing, the value of keeping notes for projects. I sent Gary a little note. I said, do you keep notes on your projects? because I thought for any sort of needle worker, keeping some sort of notes, I used this for this project, and you have a whole template of what to put in for weaving, which is fantastic. So you don't even have to think about it. Really.
Right, right. And it is really really helpful to have that. I've got a big notebook in my online course. I kind of go through and show the students my various samples and talk about them and have all of that documentation of you know, what gauge wire I used and how many strands of weft did I use, because let's face it, we all go to sleep and then wake up and don't really remember every little thing. So
it's
a good habit,
and it's, and then in the book there's you show, like, you made little swatches for a bigger project to see if they would work. And I thought, even, you know, any sort of needle worker, if we're going to make a huge, if you're going to spend a lot of time on a large project, to take the time to do a little sample of the stitch, or, you know, like on a doodle cloth, we're always talking about using a doodle cloth. It's the same sort of concept, you know, where you got a little sample, and you, so that way, you know, this is what this looks like. This is, it's a visual, you know, for those of us that are very visual. You have that there, and you can go back and reference it again, and it's helpful.
Exactly. And I think it, you know, every single material has its own personality, whether if it's all DMC, but it's this color and that color and that color, you know, they still have their own story to tell. And so it's really, you know, it seems like it's a little more time on the front end, but I think for anybody really wanting to, you know, be clear about what they're trying to communicate through their work, that sort of sampling process really can take it to that next level for the finished piece.
Right. I think so too. I think sometimes, and Like I said, I'm very impatient. I want to get to the big project. I just want to work on it. I want to move that idea forward. And I'm thinking, like, no, I need to step back and say, no, let's just do these little samples so you can see how your materials are going to, are they really doing what you want them to? Are they really saying what they, you want them to say? You're right. And unless you do the little samples, how will you know?
Yeah, well, and you can dive in and then have to tear out a bunch of stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's not right, so.
Yeah, it's just no fun. Never any fun.
Did doing this book make you a better artist?
Oh, yes. You know, and I know your audience, this kind of gets to the concept of craft versus art, right? And that's not an easy thing to define necessarily.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, I started my fiber art as a child. When I was in third grade, I'd go out and knit at recess. That was what I did. And by the time I was in sixth grade, I was sewing my own clothing and doing needlepoint and embroidery and all the different things. So there is great beauty and value and foundation in craft. And my own personal definition or explanation is that, you know, craft is maybe created through instruction or through kits or just through a lot of repetition, you know, which then it becomes more like a formula. Oh, this really looks good and people like this and I can really sell these at the art show. And so I'll just keep making those. And I certainly participated in that world for many, many years, kind of, you know, crossing over between craft and artistic expression. When I went back to school to become an art educator, you know, in my midlife, I, with 20 years of weaving with wire under my belt, that was powerful. There I was at university, and every single assignment I had, I tried, if I could, to put it through the lens of the woven metal, and I was largely successful at that. So there was a lot of artistic growth. But you know what? It also gets back to the thinking and questioning, you guys. It's great art has a story to tell. It has a viewpoint that it's expressing. It is not, it's not just a beautiful object, and that's not to dismiss beautiful objects at all. There's definitely a place for that, but I think when you really begin to make art about really big ideas, then there's a big shift. And I think, you know, becoming a teacher helped me understand that more and more. It's not something that we're always taught through our workshops. I mean, do you agree with that? You guys have taken, I'm sure, scads of needlework workshops. And how did you think about that concept?
Well, I think they it a lot of times it's needle up at one and down at two. There isn't a lot of how to make this express more of who you are. Does that or tell a story or try to express yourself personally? And I think people are, well, I know I am. I'm afraid of taking that leap from, you know, maybe being what I consider a crafter, this is my hobby, to moving it into the art realm, because it's, you know, the fear of rejection, the fear that what I do doesn't, people won't like it. You know, oh, it, you know, it's not conventional, or no one will see what I see as the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so workshops don't, most of the ones that I've taken don't try to push you past the, this is what this project should look like. I've taken a few that do, and I've actually, those are the ones that I've never completed, because they were maybe a little bit more of a stretch than I wanted to do at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard. And I've had friends who there was one that I did finish, and she was like, okay, you know, this is your parameters, but you can choose. And people just hated it. they're like, cause you know, like we were painting things, and some people's didn't look exactly like the teacher's, and they were like, mm-hmm. well, mine doesn't look like yours. And so the teacher gave them some of hers that she'd already painted so that theirs would look more, or said, hey, it looks fine. But I did finish that, and I enjoyed it. It took me several years to get back to it, but that was a hard step to say, okay, mine is going to look different than hers. I'm just going for it. This is how it looks. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Oh yeah. No, that's exactly, that's exactly, I think, how a lot of people feel. And you know, they have the creative spirit and desire, but they're insecure about their artistic expressions. And it goes back to, you know, people don't teach how to think and question. You know, when I do visiting artists, like I've gone into school districts and worked with the third graders, and we did some paper cloth and little collage landscapes, and the big idea was memory. And so I asked the kids, it's like, okay, we're gonna talk about memory. And then just as I did in the book, it's like, here are some questions for you to think about. How can you keep a memory in your heart, right? Mm-hmm. How can memory change the way you think of something? How can memory be like going back to your favorite place? And when you ask questions like that before you ever start thinking about what you're going to make, it changes the trajectory, I believe, because then it becomes personal, and then it becomes relevant to your life and what you think. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it still can't be beautiful, but you're right, Beth, because all of a sudden the safety net of the instructions has kind of vanished. You may have some basic instructions, and that's what I attempt to do in the book. It's like, I just want to give you some basic instructions on how to handle the material. But then what are you going to do with it? And I'm not going to tell you what to do with it. Right. In fact, I've had some of my students in my class, there's like, well, what kind of yarn should we weave with? And I said, well, what's on your shelf? You know, I don't want to tell you. I mean, I'm going to tell you to a point, just structurally, so that you have, you know, a material that is going to be good. But if I told everybody, now everybody get out your 10-2 cotton and, you know, do this and that, well, everybody's work is going to look the same. And there's so much invention and spontaneity and playing and trying out new things. And that's another thing I think that, you know, in workshops, and I just was one this weekend. I was at a felting workshop that our guild put on. And I try to remind myself and others, you know, that oftentimes what you're doing is practice. It's not a performance. But when you go into even a workshop situation, you feel like you need to perform and you need to come out of that workshop with this, you know, fantastic creation. And sometimes it doesn't really go that way. Sometimes it's a, you know, a little bit of a bomb, and people can feel really, maybe that's what you're talking about, Beth. You feel sad. You're like, oh, mine didn't really work out. It didn't look as great as the teacher's. Well, you know, you're practicing. You're not performing at this point. So,
And I think that's a good point. I think taking workshops, taking classes that kind of stretch you out of that comfort zone are important. That where you're, you let yourself go and say, okay, I'm just playing. I'm not expecting something. I remember being somewhere and I was just throwing paint down, you know, literally. And someone came up and said, that's really ugly. I literally said that to him. And I was like, but it's okay. I'm going to cover this over. I already know that at this point in time, I am literally at the bottom layer. I am playing. She's this person, I've known her for a long time. She's very blunt. So I expected that to come out of her mouth. It wasn't a surprise. So it wasn't like a new, but you have to, sometimes you just need to go do that. You need to go out of that comfort zone of, you know, up at one, down at two and say, okay, we're just going to go free form. We're going to play. And you mentioned that in your book. I'm trying to find the page here. It's it's that circle. Where was it? Oh, the Studio Habits of the Mind.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing that I thought was important is the reflect question. I think sometimes we don't stop and reflect on our work. Why, like, and your book made me do that. Like I said, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I cross-stitching right now? Why am I doing this type of needlework right now? And then looking too at, you know, at what I was doing. Can I change this? Am I willing to take a leap and try something new, even if it's not perfect? You know, just try it. Does that make, and I thought that was really good. Those little points you had there on the, with the Studio Habits in Mind. That was a great jumping off point.
Yeah. See, Beth, you're describing exactly, I mean, because to me, the fundamental problem with today's education system is it is so focused on feed the answers to the students, memorize them, and regurgitate them on a test. And they're not taught to ask questions. They're not taught to seek out alternatives or seek out information. And that's, to me, that's what this section in the book does, is focuses on, you know, explore, ask questions, you know, question things, and look at what you're trying to achieve for your art, not to regurgitate what someone else has created.
Yeah. And, you know, these studio habits were the backbone of my art classroom with my freshman and sophomore students. And, you know, having them in a circle, it's not a continuum, right? There's no starting point. There's no finish point. It's a place where you can move freely from one concept to another. But as a teacher, we used to have these rubrics and I hated them. They were, you know, a little grid and with points across and then going down like develop craft, time on task, you know.
Yep.
And I thought, what does that tell me about what they learned? I mean, they go and they circle the numbers and they total it up. And so when I moved into the Studio Habits, then their reflection piece for their grade, like their little air quote test, was, Beth, how did you engage in, or what part of your clay project did you have to engage and persist in? Gary, How did making a sketch in your journal help you envision what your final project turned out to be? And then the kids would write two or three sentences about that. And guess what? I learned what they learned. Mm-hmm. It was so wonderful. And they, you know, they made the thing, but then they went back and they questioned using the habits to really understand at a deeper level what had just happened in that process.
Right.
See, but that's education there. That's mm-hmm. that's learning. That's yeah.
Right.
Because those skills you now can take and apply elsewhere, as opposed to I memorized 10 questions and got the answers all right. Big deal. You know, what did you take out of that? That, yeah, that's the power.
And, you know, I will just make a little plug in my online courses. I've got a lot of free digital downloads for teachers. And one of them is Be the Fiber Artist You Want to Be, using the Studio Habits of Mind. So it's on my teaching site. But I did write a workbook that I have up there for, you know, like $14.99, but it's all about thinking and questioning strategies. And, you know, it's funny because my daughter said, Mom, you're spending way more time on this workbook than you ever did on your book. What is the deal? And it was a good question. And I thought, well, the book, I know exactly what to tell everybody because I've been doing this for a long time. The workbook about thinking and questioning, I want to help people reconnect with thinking and questioning. And, you know, I used to teach my freshman students about metacognition, learning thinking about their thinking. You know, we talked about divergent thinking. There's a really great questioning technique called the question formulation technique that we used in the art classroom. And so I felt like that little workbook is even an extension from the book, you know, that I was able to take those ideas and really flesh them out even more and tie it to real life. Okay, here are these concepts about different thinking and questioning strategies. And here are examples in life. It doesn't matter who you are, how old you are. You know, we all have to continue to think and ask questions. And yet, I don't see a lot of evidence of that happening out in the world, you know? And I think partly it's because we are getting information like water out of a fire hose. Like we're just overwhelmed with so much information. And it causes us, I know for myself, I'm just like, oh, I just can't even deal with any of this, you know, but it needs to, some of it needs to be dealt with. And, so anyway, I continue to want to teach the world, you guys. It's
Well, that whole fire hose thing, you know, that is a very real problem. In the magazine that I edit for manufacturers, that is one of the main issues today, is that all the sensors that are in a manufacturing plant, all delivering data around the clock, and there is such a flood of information. And that same thing happens in manufacturing. We don't know what data we really care about. We have right. all mm-hmm. this stuff. We don't know what we care about. How do we sort this out? And it's a very real problem that is not easily solved, because if you choose the wrong data, you go the wrong direction. And
right.
you describe a very real problem across the board, everyday life. Yeah, we have way too much information. Yeah. and so much of it not good. You know, it's because that's right. That's the other thing. Data integrity is the other issue that we deal with all the time.
And you can search out the data you want to justify your point of view.
Right.
So that's where the critical thinking skills come in. And that's where we have a distinct lack of critical thinking skills.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
we do.
So back to weaving.
I think the other one thing that you made a point of, and you said it while we were talking, is your need for community, of the art community, of finding people to bounce ideas off.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we, you know, you can look at your piece and you're thinking, well, something's wrong, or, you know, I don't quite see it. But if you hand it, you know, you show it to friends who are going to give you, you know, not this is ugly, but, you know, give you a helpful critique. That was the other thing. I noticed in your book that you had in there that you had, you had an art community around you that you bounce ideas off of.
And that's so important and valuable. And, you know, one of the habits, studio habits, is envisioning. Some people do journal. Some people like to sketch and draw. I am not one of those people. But, you know, I can envision by having a conversation with, I have a couple of gals that I call my art sisters, and that's exactly what we do. And, you know, during the pandemic, we met every week. We Zoomed and we had this lovely space that once the pandemic was over, now we don't have time to to do this once a week like we did. But I think for your listeners that is, you know, that's a way to envision for yourself is through conversation and being with trusted friends who understand the process, or maybe sometimes they don't, you know, maybe they don't really know how you do what you do, but then they're going to give you a really fresh take on what's going on with your work. My daughter always does that for me. She, you know, she's a millennial. Well, she calls herself an elder millennial. She distinguishes her little subsection of the generation. But, you know, I like to run things past her because she'll just look at it and go, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, let me cogitate on that idea. So,
I did want to ask a technical weaving question. And I will say right up front, I was really proud of myself when I started reading the book. I thought I knew which was the warp and which was the weft. And I thought, oh, I better look it up just to make sure. And I was right. So I was really proud of that. But when you talk about the wire as you weave getting less flexible, and it was intriguing to me dealing with a yarn or a fabric type material, and then you're weaving on wire, which doesn't have near the give. That whole, there seemed to be a real experience and skill thing involved in just dealing with wire as you weave.
Well, what's interesting about that is, you know, and I am coining this phrase a lot for this community, wire as fiber, because it has a lot of fiber characteristics. And yet, you know, and I never took physics in school, but I famously say, and it's all about physics often, because it is, you know, and that is that the wire, you know, if you bend it too many times, it gets weaker and it can break. And if it's put under too much tension, it can snap. And so there are delicacies that you need to understand about the material. But the 28 gauge, which is the size of wire I use for the foundation project and what I weave with the most, is kind of the sweet spot. It's strong, but it's flexible. And once you get the wire onto the loom, people ask me, they're like, oh, doesn't it hurt your hands? It's like, no, it doesn't. Once you get it on the loom and you start weaving, it's like really weaving any other kind of material in a way. There's some little things you need to, you know, keep your eyes out for, but it's a pretty straightforward process. Because I sew all my work together with wire after I shape it and sculpt it. And so where I hurt myself the most is stabbing myself with the needle. Yeah, for sure. But all the wire, it's just a lovely, lovely material to work with. And my guild sister and I are starting to explore. We're going to put some more classes up here in the coming months, like one that we hope to get up in a couple or 3 weeks, which is putting wire on pin looms, which is a little portable type of loom. And then we're going to put wire on rigid heddle looms and write instruction so that the student, you know, we always, when you're teaching something, you want the highest percentage of success for your students, right? So you have to think through the process to support that. And so that's why that foundation project is like, do it exactly like I tell you to. And if you do, it's probably going to be great for you, you know, because I figured out all the little nuances of that process. But it's a really, really interesting material. And I find that more and more artists are incorporating wire into their work. And a lot of young artists are exploring this. It is kind of a fiber frontier, I think. And I realized, you know, in the fiber world, you know, you have like the quilting world. Well, that's an enormous world. And then the weaving world is big, but not as big as the quilting world. And then you weave with wire. So my whole little path is very niche, right? Or niche. I don't know. I don't expect everyone to be interested in weaving with wire, but I want people to feel comfortable and feel supported and say, oh, I think I could do this too. You know, let's see what happens with it and just check it out. Just explore it and see how it works. You know, I think what is one of the most amazing things about this whole part of my life is I took a workshop, a 3-day workshop through my guild, and it instantly and profoundly changed my life. I mean, I only wove with wire for the next 20 years. And in fact, you guys, I have for my students, I have a monthly Zoom gathering. I call it Wire Weaver Hangout. And I have guest artists come that also use wire. Maybe they use it in a tapestry technique, or maybe they are doing Viking knit. There's lots of different processes and techniques you can do with wire and metal. But this month, my original teacher, Donna Kaplan, is going to be our guest, and I am over the moon about it. I credit her and thank her and gush all over her incessantly, but she changed my life. And I think that it doesn't always happen that way in a workshop. I mean, that's a pretty rare kind of experience, but I think for your listeners to know, man, you can go do something over a weekend and your life is not going to be the same after that as it was for me. So that's pretty awesome experience to have.
Yep. Oh, using what you weave to then cast into solid metal.
Oh,
what? Talk about that. Oh, jeez.
Wow. You know, I'd gone back to university to get my art education certification, and I had to take a sculpture class, which I wanted to do. I was so fortunate because honestly, that space was, it was kind of a boys' club, I'm not going to lie. And, you know, here I was, a non-traditional student. I was in my 40s. I was a white woman. I was like, okay, they're going to think, you know, I am a powder puff or I don't know, whatever. But my instructor, he didn't flinch. I went to him. I said, I want to use my woven metal as the positive for these bronze castings. And he said, okay. And so I was able to cast those three sculptures, which, you know, as I say in the book, they all three miscast. but, oh, gosh, I really am hoping I can get back to that. I've made a run at it a couple of times, and I haven't found a foundry that it's going to take some R&D. I got kind of lucky that they worked out so well in that university environment. I did go to a continuing education course. I tried to do it again a few years later, and it was a big fail. It just didn't work at all. So I need to find someone that can help me think this through. But that I think is super exciting. And what's cool about it, the wire doesn't burn out. When you make this ceramic shell and you torch inside there to usually it would be wax. That's what most bronze is cast from, wax or something. But so the wire is still very much integral in the bronze piece, but all the fiber has been burned out and turns to bronze. And so it's my gosh.
So that's a whole nother world to explore if you get the right conditions and the right equipment then.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
It never ends. It never ends. All right. We're going to run out of time here. Do some marketing. What's up next for you?
Well, as I said, my ChristineKMillerCourses.com is my little online studio. You have free downloads. You've got the Thinking and Questioning workbook, and really, I'm not done. You know, not everyone has a floor loom that's, or a table loom that's four harness. So we're putting wire on a lot of different small portable looms that will have instruction over the next few months. And then once we get through all that R&D, we'll write a second book to compile that information into a book. But we, unlike this book, we have to figure the next bit out. So it's very fun. We're having a lot of fun experimenting and playing with everything.
Oh, that's great. All right, we're going to wrap up here. The book is Weaving with Wire, Christine K. Miller. Available your website, where else?
Well, Schiffer Publishers, you know, Amazon, just wherever books are sold, as they say, I think you can order it or find it.
Yep. And if you never weave a thing, it is a book worth owning. Trust me, it is. Yes. You will learn from it. Yep.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yep. All right, Christine, thanks. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for putting that book together. It's a valuable piece of literature, and thanks for the time.
I really appreciate both of you getting to be together again. So thanks so much.
Thank you.